welcome to the podcast Education Transformation, hosted by Lee and Kate Reach. Today we are joined by special guest Anthony Bailey to discuss the success of the Kiribati Institute of Technology. Anthony is the strategic advisor with the Kiribati facility and Skills for Employment program managed by Scope Global and funded by the Australian Aid Program. Since 2007, Anthony has worked in a number of Pacific Island countries on Pacific and Economic Development programs. Anthony has extensive experience supporting Pacific Island training providers and quality agencies in areas such as improving quality and relevance of skills training, delivery of skills training in emergency and disaster situations, and strengthening the TVET teaching practices. Join us as we discuss the success of the Kiribati Institute of Technology. So Anthony, thanks so much for this important discussion.
Thanks, Lee, and thanks very much for the opportunity to talk to you about Kiribati Institute of Technology and technical vocational education and training in Kiribati.
Okay, so perhaps we could start by, if you'd like to just define the physical location of the nation of Kiribati.
Yes, it's a good question, or a good place to start, Lee. Many people I know when I meet and they say, oh, where do you work? And I say, oh, I work in a country called Kiribati. And they look at you, oh, where's that? And a Kiribati colleague of mine once said, the best way to describe Kiribati is to think about the dateline and the equator. And right where they meet in the middle is almost the heart of Kiribati. So it actually straddles the four hemispheres. It's the only country in the world that does that. It's located about 3.5 hours north by plane from Fiji. It was the former Gilbert and Alice Islands, a British colony. And it's a low-lying atoll country. So the highest point above sea level is about 9 feet in the old measurement, and it's a very dispersed country. There are atolls stretching wider than the width of the United States of America, so from South Tararua all the way across to Christmas Island. It's spread over a huge expanse of sea, and about 34 atolls are inhabited. The majority of the population live on the atoll of Tararua, in particular South Tararua, very high population density there, and also in some of the other smaller atolls. It's a country which has a number of challenges, some related to climate change, so increasing frequency of extreme weather events are impacting on the country. The number of people living, in particularly in South Tararua, has created a certain sort of, you know, health and social problems as well. But notwithstanding the challenges the country faces, it's got a very vibrant culture, long history of life on and around the sea, and it's a great place to work.
So how long have you been travelling in and out of Kiribati?
I first visited Kiribati in 2007 when I first started working in the Pacific, and I too was one of those people who didn't know where Kiribati was at the time, and in fact it's the first country that I visited in the Pacific, so it has a very special place in my heart because it was the first country I visited, and I was just so taken by the culture and the people and the unique geographical location and topography that I've been returning since then, since 2007, so quite a few years, and I've seen quite a lot of change in the country over that time.
No doubt. Fantastic. Wonderful. Well, I'm sure we'll explore some of that as we go through this interview. So recently, the Kiribati Institute of Technology, or KIT, as many people refer to it as, celebrated their 50th anniversary. How important and how significant is that to the nation of Kiribati?
Oh, it's a very significant milestone for the country, Lee. Kiribati Institute of Technology began in 1970 as the Tararua Technical Institute, or TTI as it was known, and that was pre-independence. And so for about 10 years, it was known as the pre-independence was known as the Tara Technical Institute, and it had a number of expatriate academic staff and eCurabi staff. And then post-independence, the institute really started to develop as a locally led institute. And then in the late 1990s, the Australian government started to support the development at that point it was then known as Kiribati Institute of Technology through the Australian Aid Program. And over the time, it's developed from a very small technical training provider in Baso, which is in the South Tarawa, to a national institute which has three campuses, two in Tarawa and one on Christmas Island, and is delivering skills programs right across the country, so in outer islands as well. That 50th anniversary was a recognition of the development of the institute as the premier technical training institute in the country, and one that's been responsible really for driving a lot of, you know, the economic development both locally and also for eCurabus workers travelling overseas for employment. A lot of people say it's the best kept secret in Kiribati, because outside of the country, not a lot of people know about this really impressive demand-driven training institute, which has developed over time and now is at a point of accrediting its own courses under the Pacific Community Education Quality Assessment Program, and also delivering Australian qualifications in partnership with Australian Registered Training Organisations, and its own kind of short courses for business development, small business owners, and the public service.
So they really do have a national sense of pride, don't they, in the institute, in the organisation, much more so than perhaps how we would view a training institution within the Western world.
Oh, yes, very much so, Lee. And that's not uncommon in the Pacific. The community has a very strong attachment to the institute. It's like one big kind of village, really, I think, which is you see a lot in the Pacific. And so, you know, family members of KIT lecturers, they'll often come to the campus and you get to know them, and you know, the children of the staff often, you know, come to campus after school. So it's got a very strong community feel, and I think because of the success of the institute in terms of being regionally recognised and known for its reputation as a quality provider, there's a strong sense of pride, I would say, in the country about KIT and its achievements. And I think particularly because despite the challenges that Kiribati faces in general, but KIT as well, they have been able to adapt their training delivery, adapt the organisation to meet new challenges. The coronavirus is a very salient kind of point, I guess, on that one that they're facing at the moment. But there's a resilience there, which I think is something that's very obvious in a country like Kiribati. They're resilient people, but there's also an enthusiasm and a pride in the achievements of the institute, which is shared really right across the country.
Very much so. You sense it as you walk through the gates, don't you? You sense the pride, you sense the energy and the enthusiasm within both the faculty, but also within the student body.
Oh, yes, very much so. And I'd also say the alumni. So we have, there's a fantastic alumni association, KIT, and they do, not just social things, but, you know, they've done these clean-up days where they've taken a section of South Tara and done a clean-up day. Recently, the KIT alumni undertook to do a mangrove replanting activity just not far from the airport, that section there, you know, Lee, where you come out of the airport there. So look, so they've got a really keen interest in their nation's well-being, in the development of the nation, and I think that's partly because of the experience they've had at the Institute, and a sense of wanting to give back to the community, wanting to give back to the country, having the experience of it. Of the training,
I've been involved with that with one of those cleanup days, and they had a drone overhead filming and recording the activities. So there's, as you say, great enthusiasm and a commitment to the nations. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
When and why did the Institute take the decision to become an English-speaking campus, and how has that English training evolved over time?
Yeah, this is a really good example, I think, of how a small, relatively small training provider can take on a big decision about which way it's going to go, and then how that's going to impact on the future. So perhaps if I just go back just before that decision was made, the Australian government through the AID program has been a key supporter for KIT's development over the last 15 years. And in an early phase of the program, it was the Kiribati Tibet Sector Strengthening Program. And that had two elements to it. One was supporting KIT, and the other one was supporting the ministry to develop a Tibet policy and to strengthen the ministerial capacity to manage and coordinate the sector in Kiribati. In the second phase, the Australian government support really focused on KIT and developing its capacity. And one of the key outcomes for KIT is to prepare students, skill them up for employment domestically, regionally, and internationally. And internationally in particular. So the Kiribati workers, well, prior to coronavirus, the Kiribati workers in a number of countries, Australia, New Zealand, other parts of the Pacific, and quite a lot of seafarers who are trained through the Marine Training Centre, which is another kind of institute in Kiribati, looking after the seafarer maritime training. And it was recognised that English was going to be a key skill for particularly international workers, but also for the domestic market as well. And at the time, the language of instruction was a mix of Kiribati and English. But the Kiribati executive team, the deputy principals and the principal, who was an Australian technical advisor at the time, through a long period of consultation and consideration, decided that it would be beneficial for the students if it was an English-speaking campus.
Yeah.
And they set about developing a four-year strategy, a four-year plan to transition from the current state to English-speaking. And it was really a fascinating journey that the whole institute went on, including the student body, and it was a phased approach to reaching the goal of the English-speaking campus. So, for example, in the first year, Kiribati was a language of instruction, but staff were encouraged to talk to each other in English when they were not in class. And then in the second year, English was introduced for all courses as language of instruction, and Kiribati and was used for teachers just talking to each other, perhaps back in the staff room or in a meeting. And then the third year was another increase in the use of English language, and by the fourth year, a transition or evolution to an English speaking campus. And it was not without its problems, as any of these sorts of major, that's a major change, if you think about it, Lee,
absolutely.
Or for any institute, particularly when English for some of the teachers was perhaps their third language. They might have had an island language, Kiribati, plus English.
Yep.
And you know, there was a lot of goodwill. There was a high level of enthusiasm for it, I think partly because, you know, there was so much consultation taken place. It was a very, measured, well-planned approach, which addressed people's fear, for example. And there were teachers who were fearful of, you know, not being able to deliver a class in English. That was one of the challenges that the Institute faced. And so, you know, with a lot of goodwill, which I think is super important. And I think also the technical advisors working on the program at the time were very aware of the cultural nuances that needed to be noticed, and also the cultural kind of setting that needed to be, you know, managed really, really well, so that people felt confident to speak English in front of their peers. They felt confident to make mistakes in front of their peers, which was identified as a major barrier, that people wouldn't speak English because they felt they would be, you know, they'd make a mistake and their colleagues would, you know, either sort of laugh at them or, you know, not take them seriously. So, you know, with a lot of pastoral care, I think is perhaps not a bad way to look at it. You know, a lot of pastoral care and a lot of consideration and a lot of support through different types of English language training services for the teachers, different in-service activities, staff development, and underpinning it was a whole of institute approach. So it wasn't just the teaching, it was also the administration staff, the maintenance staff. Everyone was part of the transition to English-speaking campus. So that took, you know, that was a long-term activity. Recently, the Institute launched an English language strategy to guide English language use of English language usage in the Institute over the next 5 years. And that was a very successful strategy development, and the implementation is going well now. And partly KIT has an employment support services unit, which we might talk about a bit more in detail later on. But many of the workers that use the services of that unit need to improve their English for employment in New Zealand, say with the recognised seasonal employer program or the seasonal worker program in Australia.
Fantastic. It's such an important part of who they are and their regional influence now, which is quite evident, which is great. What about, you've touched on it, but do you want to elaborate and just briefly outline the collaborative links between other TVET stakeholders within the region? So Marine Training Centre as an example, and EQAP and APTC and alike.
Yes, it's a really, I think, one of the defining features of KIT is how it collaborates and works with local partners and regional partners. I mentioned earlier the Marine Training Centre. So in Kiribati, it's slightly differently to other Pacific countries. TVET, or Vocational Education and Training, sits within the Ministry of Employment and Human Resource. In many other countries, it sits within the Ministry of Education and Training or the Ministry of Youth and Sport, for example, as was the case several years ago in Tonga. So within the ministry, there's the Marine Training Centre, which is a very impressive maritime training centre, which has been training seafarers for decades in partnership with international shipping companies and funded with support from the New Zealand Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade. And so Marine Training Centre and Kiribati Institute of Technology are two departments of the ministry. So there's a strong partnership between those two, partly because they're in the same ministry, but also because we share a number of services with each other. Kiribati Institute of Technology has given a lot of support to the Marine Training Centre, say, for example, with English language. And at the moment, the institutes are jointly delivering a hospitality course, which has been a fantastic example of a partnership with the Australia Pacific Training Coalition, APTC. there's been a long partnership between those two organisations. APTC is another Australian aid-funded program. It's a regional skills development program. And through its coordinator in Kiribati, there's a partnership between the two Australian aid programs. And that has been fantastic for APTC in having an opportunity to work with eKiribati colleagues. And it's been great for KIT having access to staff development opportunities and delivery of courses at a higher level than what's currently being delivered at KIT. So there's a good backwards and forwards collaborative link there.
Yes.
ECAP, which is responsible for education quality and assessment in across the Pacific through the Pacific community, is a strong partner with KIT because we have been using ECAP in order to accredit KIT qualifications. So to have them regionally recognised, which is very important, as you'd know, because it's kind of like a quality stamp on the KIT course.
Yep.
And so that's been a really great opportunity for KIT to start to look at its future sustainability through developing its own courses and then having them quality assured through a regional quality assurance program.
Mm.
Locally, so many partnerships that KIT has, because being the only, large-scale technical vocational institute in the country, everyone wants to work with KIT. It's actually you're in a very good position because everyone wants to work with KIT. But we do have a couple of very strong partnerships with Child Fund Kiribati,
mm-hmm.
and maybe we'll get a chance to talk about the bridging program a bit later on. But that's been a great example of a partnership with a non-government organisation focused on youth and community development. And there was a very very neat fit between the work of Child Fund Kiribati and the work of Kiribati Institute of Technology. Wherever possible, KIT seeks to avoid duplication. So if some community organisation or entity is doing something in skills, then KIT won't go and do the same thing as that. They'll work out how to work with that group and help them, or look at something else. We've just signed an MOU with the Kiribati Women and Children's Support Centre as part of our gender equality and women's empowerment strategy.
Okay.
And that's going to be a great partnership for KIT, because it will mean female staff and the female students will have access to referral services. They'll have access to pastoral care and... we have a mother's room at KIT to support our female students who are mothers. There are quite a number of young women in Kiribati with children, and pregnancy can sometimes interrupt their learning. So we actually have an on-campus mother's room, and the Kiribati Women's and Children's Support Centre, they're going to help to strengthen the services that we provide, particularly, in that area.
Fantastic. Well, look, let's actually delve into that a little bit more. So, obviously, KIT in recent times, at least obviously for us, but for the listeners maybe not, but KIT in recent times has invested considerable support services to support their student body. So disability services, gender equity, the bridging program, as you spoke about, is a fantastic success story for disengaged youth. What have been some of those outcomes? Why don't we expand on that a little bit more?
Yeah, thanks, Lee. Look, I think the bridging program in particular is something very close to my heart, because it's actually one of the only kind of programs of its type in the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
The bridging program came about because there are a lot of young eKiribati who they finish school early or don't complete secondary school. So there's a lot of young eKiribati who've had interrupted education. And the bridging program was designed to provide a pathway to education and work for out-of-school youth. Significant, you know, it's a significant proportion of the young population in Kiribati, unfortunately. And so with, you know, out-of-school youth, sometimes comes social problems. And so this was seen as a way to put them on a pathway where they could either go to higher education. So in this case, that would be somewhere like sort of Kiribati Institute of Technology, or work opportunities, both locally or internationally. The program was designed with Child Fund Kiribati. And it was really interesting because in the early days in the consultation of Child Fund Kiribati, they have a fantastic strategy and methodology for engaging with community to ask them what they want, how would they like the services delivered in order for them to be customised to according to their needs. And one of the things that came up was separate groups for boys and girls. And sometimes, you know, when you're talking about the bridging program, particularly sometimes when you're talking to women, they'll say, oh, you shouldn't have, you know, separated groups. Oh, you know, why have you got girls-only groups? And it's like, well, it's actually the students themselves who identified that they felt they would learn better in with their peers of the same sex, same gender. Mm-hmm. And it has proven to be a very successful strategy. And one of the things is that the boys said that they were they felt they had fear of failure if they were, you know, with studying with girls and they weren't being successful.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's something you need to take notice of. You know, if that comes up in a consultation, there's clearly something there. And so we decided to act on that. And so both programs are delivered separately to boys and girls. It's a comprehensive study program that includes English language, work skills, work-related, you know, work employability skills, I suppose, is what they used to be called.
Yes.
And plus a technical skills component, and that can be customized depending on where the course is being delivered. So, for example, we recently started delivering that course for a boys group in Abemama Island. And the technical training component is the refurbishment of the town council building.
Okay.
Yep. So the outcome will be the students will gain new skills in construction, occupational health and safety, and workplace skills. But then the community will benefit because there'll be a refurbished town council building for the community to use. So it's a win-win for the community and for the students. At the moment, we have a girls group in Abemama as well, and the technical skills one there is in the creative industries, in handicraft.
Okay, yep.
And the win-win there is that, you know, the course is helping to maintain cultural knowledge and cultural skills in weaving.
Yep.
And as you know, Lee, weaving is a very important part of Kiribati's culture. Mm. Yeah, we're helping that course is helping to maintain, you know, cultural knowledge and skills, which I think is really important in this era when we live in. That's because, as you know, Lee, I mean, nearly everyone in Kiribati has a phone.
Yes.
You know, the digital world is not the digital world is very present in Kiribati.
It is.
I think it's got one of the highest kind of Facebook user rates per capita than in many countries in the Pacific. So there's the risk that cultural knowledge that disappears. So, you know, in consultation with the communities and Child Fund Kiribati, that was identified as the technical skills for that program. The program was recently accredited under ECAT, so it's now a KIT qualification.
Yep.
And very pleasingly, we've had some very early discussions with the Tuvalu Education Program, which is another DFAT-funded program in Tuvalu, about the potential for that bridging program to be delivered to out-of-school youth in Tuvalu, which, you know, would be a great opportunity for KIT actually to be, you know, sharing its knowledge and expertise internationally with another Pacific country.
Yeah, well, it is such a success story, that bridging program, on so many levels, isn't it? I came in 2017, and so, you know, in a way, had the pleasure of seeing it get launched and all the rest. And when KIT opens the campus up to community consultation days and the community's invited in, that bridging program really, really demonstrates a sense of pride of who they are. So without that program, a lot of those kids would have very few options. So it's a wonderful thing to observe, and some great stories come out of that program.
Yes, and the managing contractor for KIT, or for the Kiribati facility and the Skills for Employment program, which supports KIT Scope Global, they've been able to mobilise, you know, some excellent technical advisors to work on the bridging program. So there's one technical advisor who works very closely with the bridging team at KIT, Angela Reed. She's has been working on that bridging program now for a number of years, and so there's been a, you know, quite a big strengthening of capacity at the institute to deliver that course.
Well, that's right. That's right. And a genuine passion within Angela and within the faculty.
Yes, yeah. And I think that's one of the successes of the Skills for Employment program and the Kiribati facility is the enthusiasm and the dedication that the technical advisors have for the program, and working with their counterparts at KIT. I might just add, it's interesting that the bridging programs, we link very closely with the communities where the programs are being delivered. And last year was the beginning of the first program in Bairiki, up near the airport.
Yep.
And there was a bit of a problem with attendance. And so the police were really keen on the program, because they'd actually said anecdotally they thought that there'd been a decrease in antisocial behaviour, because the students were actually, you know, in learning and had a focus and were doing things. Anyway, they said, "Oh, that's okay. We'll send the truck around. We'll pick them up and we'll bring them to class every morning." So that must be one of the only programs in the world, I think, where the police are the public transport system. And someone said to me, because I said, "Oh, you know, we send the police out every morning, you know, to pick them up." So funny things like that. But, you know, so the police are interested in the program because they can see the social benefits from this program and what it, you know, the future or the opportunity it offers for the future of these students. So which is great. You mentioned earlier about disability and gender equality and women's empowerment. Yeah, the program has had a and KIT in particular has had a very strong focus on disability inclusion over the last 10 years. And as you know, Lee, I mean, having a disability in a country like Kiribati, your life is very difficult.
Mm.
There are not a lot of services available for various reasons. And community attitudes towards disability are perhaps not the same as in other countries. And so there's number of barriers for people with disabilities even before they have a chance to come to the institute to study. So we have had what we call working with what we call an outrigger approach, or in Australia you might call it a twin track approach. We did call it a twin track, but then we realised there were no trains in Kiribati, so it didn't quite work. But the outrigger, the canoe, the waka in the Pacific, very strong, symbol, cultural symbol. And so the outrigger is, you know, the main part of the canoe is mainstreaming. And the outrigger side part of the canoe is a specific intervention. So the mainstreaming approach is that we don't have classes or the institute doesn't run classes just for people with disability. They join mainstream classes with support, and reasonable adjustments are made to help them access a mainstream class. So they're seen as like any other student at KIT, no different at all. But also that requires specific interventions in order to smooth the path for them to have access and to be successful. So a specific intervention might be adapting a building to make it accessible.
Mm-hmm.
It might be providing a scribe for a student who has vision impairment. I'm really impressed and blown away, really, by the work that the Institute has done for the deaf community.
Mm-hmm.
We now have teachers, or KIT now has teachers who can Kiri sign.
That's right. Yep. Yep.
Which is fantastic. And you know, if you I kind of look back now and think, you know, several years ago we weren't this wasn't even on the radar as a kind of an activity for the Institute. But you know, slowly the demand became apparent, and through consultation with Te Toa Matoa, which is the Disabled People's Association in Kiribati and a key partner with KIT, you know, it became clear that there was opportunities available, and we there was funding support through the Skills for Employment program to help the Te Toa Matoa, you know, identify students for courses, and then for the Institute to support them in their training. The Institute also has a close relationship with the Kiribati School and Centre for Children with Special Needs.
Yes, that's right.
And you know, for example, the building students have done work around the grounds at the school there to make it safer for the children. There's been construction courses where special needs students from the school centre have come down to KIT at Baso and done a construction course and made furniture for the school, that sort of thing. So practically oriented courses, but delivered in a very supportive environment, and also delivered with the sorts of specific interventions that are going to maximise their success. And I think that's the key to it, is that with the disability inclusion, we're always looking how to maximise success, you know, in a country where, you know, there are continue to be kind of considerable barriers for people with disabilities to, you know, make decisions for themselves, you know, start out on their own pathway, and gain employment. And the outcomes have been, you know, really impressive. You know, employment in the public service, employment with contractors. I think recently two deaf students were engaged with a local contractor as building to work on a building site.
Yep, wonderful.
It's a great outcome.
Wonderful.
For them, yeah. And similarly with gender equality and women's empowerment, we have a strategy. KIT has a strategy on with how to improve that, and that's, you know, that's another area where there, you know, women face, you know, particular kinds of barriers and challenges in Kiribati. And one of the things that the program has been very strong on is women's leadership at KIT.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, the deputy, well, the acting principal at the moment is a female, Banau Siata.
Yep.
Yeah. And you know, you'd know Banau really, really well. Mm. I mean, very impressive TVET leader.
Absolutely.
We have a number of women there are a number of women of heads of department and senior teachers, which is great. I think the plumbing department is run by a female trainer.
That's right.
And, you know, that hasn't been without its challenges, both internally and externally. The perception of women in non-traditional trades is perhaps not the same in Kiribati as it is in other countries.
Yep.
And once again, a bit like the Outrigger approach, it's about mainstreaming what opportunities are available and promoting those opportunities, and then looking at specific interventions. So that might be around being a more family-friendly institute, providing pastoral support for female teachers to help them if there's, you know, issues outside of the institute, which occasionally there are, and just to be making it a more friendlier work environment for women, and to have at the heart of the work that we do, that, you know, that anyone can take advantage of the opportunities that the Institute offers.
Yeah.
And, you know, the female participation rates are very, very high, about 50-50 in the student body, which is great.
Mm.
And a good number of, good percentage of girls in non-traditional trades. And so there's some great role models, and I think that's probably been one of the successes of the gender equality and the women's empowerment strategy, has been to leverage off the role models that we have you know, in the institute that show, you know, you can do this. Yeah. To young women coming through the institute, you know, you can go on to be a leader, and there's no reason to doubt your ability. There may be challenges and barriers, which there are for everyone, but maybe particularly for females. But nonetheless, the opportunity, it's there, and the institute works really hard to remove the barriers of those opportunities. So it's not enough just to say the opportunity is there. You need often to actively to, you know, work on the structures and the environment in order to make it genuinely inclusive.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. No, look, they are wonderful stories. When you recount them, I'm thinking along the lines of, you know, the construction staff have given of their time in their holidays to deliver disability training. The English staff, when I was last there, were sitting me down at lunchtime and teaching me sign language, and I was not overly successful at all.
I know how to sign "I love you." That's it.
Well, you're doing better than me.
I'm not sure that's ever going to come in useful. But I still think, you know, at least I can say "I love you." Yeah.
maybe at customs.
True.
The female leadership in those individuals in heads of department, heads of school roles, and team leaders, you know, what underpins all of them is their great passion and their great eagerness to excel and to take on new challenges. It's fantastic, and it's actually contagious, I think.
Oh, yes. As you said before, you know, when you walk in the gate, you just, it's something else. It's certainly, in my many years working in the Australian vet sector, I rarely felt that walking into a campus.
Mm, yes.
In a TAFE institute in Victoria. Yeah, there's some. Yeah, it is a part of the village, I think. I think that's probably a great word.
Yeah, to look at it.
Mm.
So if we now take a look at the regional perspective and the outcomes of the graduates, how does KOT prepare their graduates to be a part of the Australian Labour Mobility Scheme and similar? And how do those labour mobility schemes benefit households?
There's a number of pathways for labour mobility in Kiribati with KRT graduates and MTC graduates, for that matter, as well.
Yeah.
Australia has the Pacific Labour Scheme, which has been very successful in a number of industry areas for regional Australia employers seeking workers. There's the seasonal worker program, which has been going for some time, and the Kiribati workers on the seasonal worker program work in places like South Australia with orange picking, Tasmania, I think, working in, you know, spinach, and those are the, I often think about an e-Kiribati person working in Tasmania is absolutely freezing. They must have about four layers of clothes on just to sort of get out of the house. You know, it's not an easy place to work when you're from the Pacific, I think. Yeah. But KIT, through the Employment Support Services Unit, has a big role to play in preparing students, both with skills through, you know, certificate length programs and short courses, but then also things like preparing for an interview with the Employment Support Services Unit. So interview preparation, CV preparation, English language programs, industry specific English language programs. They have an English language for hospitality program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, that's obviously looking at English language in a hospitality setting, whether that's a hotel or a restaurant. Those sorts of areas, so that helps the students have a higher level of skills. There's a number of e-Kiribati workers in personal services and aged care in Australia moment, and the School of Nursing and Health, part of their program has a couple of community services units in the program to help students gain skills for that sort of work. So there's, you know, formal kind of skills training, but also this other work, getting ready or helping to increase what they call the work ready pool with the ministry, which is a pool of workers who are ready to take on an employment opportunity. The feedback from the employers has been very positive about their work, their work ethic and Remittances are a major part of the economy. Then having that experience of working overseas and then being able to use that to start, perhaps start a local business when they've returned. And there's a hospitality worker in Kiribati, her name escapes me at the moment, but she's actually saved up enough money, and she's got a cousin of her is actually running a car rental company in Kiribati.
Okay, yeah, good.
So wonderful. Good example, I think, of the win-win.
Yeah.
So, you know, Australia wins by having a skilled worker in the country in an area where there's, you know, it's difficulty finding locals to do the job, and there's a win for Kiribati with remittances returning and opportunity for, you know, household increase in household income. The Employment Support Services Unit runs a pre-departure program, which is a very comprehensive program that takes the workers through everything from their contract to sexual reproductive health, and helps to prepare them as much as possible, as much as you can within a pretty short period of time, really, to make that transition, that successful transition to employment in another country.
Mm. Mm. Yes, quite dramatic, but very beneficial. That's right. As a listener of this podcast, you can probably tell that our business, Transformation Consultancy, has a global market presence in vocational education and training professional development. The flexibility built into our business model allows us to deliver high-quality professional development support regardless of your geographical location. Our online training courses develop cultural workplace change by providing ongoing professional development built upon 3 decades of real-world success. These courses are designed to go beyond the Certificate 4 in training and assessment and beyond the commonly presented vocational education and training webinar topics. Course titles include Develop Education Improvement Plans, Equipping Educational Leaders, Develop Your Teaching Team, High Performance Instructing, Becoming a Vocational Instructor, Facilitate a Peer-to-Peer Program, and Instructional Design. Our optional remote coaching service is also available to assist you to embed the training into your institute. To support training institutions, we offer group enrollment discounts. Learn more at www.transformationconsultancy.com.au. How has the Institute adapted during COVID-19? For many parts of the world, it's been quite devastating. What about the scenario that's occurring in Kiribati?
Kiribati, fortunately, has had no recorded cases of the coronavirus. The government moved pretty quickly, the Kiribati government moved pretty quickly in March to close the ports and limit entry. The Institute had a 3-week shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
And in that time, it was an opportunity to accelerate an online learning program that the Institute's been developing for some time using Moodle, the Moodle. So that, you know, that was on the cards. Well, that was on the plan to do anyway, to increase the capacity for online flexible delivery at the Institute. But given the state of emergency and the fact that the Institute had to close, it was accelerated. So, you know, the team really took advantage of this temporary closure to scale up the delivery of activity on Moodle, the learning management system.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you know, Lee, not all students have access to a device, not all students have a laptop. So home study packs were printed, hard copy home study packs, or study books were printed and distributed to students in order to make sure that there was equitable opportunity.
Yes.
Which was great, and that's a very important thing, particularly in a crisis situation. I think is that equity, you know, access and equity is really, really critical. When things reopened, we kind of leapfrogged a couple of months, I think, really, which is good out of the kind of necessity of responding to a crisis.
Mm.
Following that, the Institute's been working with UNICEF and Child Fund Kiribati on the manufacture of portable wash stations recycled material. So there's a story about that on the KIT website. It's pretty cool. So it's these portable wash stations which can be set up in primary schools or community facilities using repurposed drums and a very simple design. It was designed by the incubator group and the incubatees. Yes. We call it the BIG now, the Business Incubator Group. They started manufacturing them and they're being installed in schools in South Tarawa.
Fantastic.
I guess there's another example of a partnership with UNICEF, Child Fund Kiribati, and KIT, specifically around the public hygiene response to COVID.
Yeah.
And the program has done well. There was quite a bit of public public hygiene training for the staff, for the students, for communities locally in using the Maniaba.
And the Maniaba is for the listeners listening in is always a large meeting area, isn't it? Often has a roof over the top and concrete floor and no walls, and that's where everybody gathers within the villages.
Yes, and there's a whole kind of cultural significance to the Maniaba as well. We don't have time to go into that, but it's a very important space.
It is.
And the KIT Maniaba is a beautiful modern interpretation of a traditional Maniaba. It's the place of very special events. The 50th anniversary took place in there with the president and
wonderful
the High Commissioner. Yeah, it was a great event. But I think part of the response is the resilience of the local population, and there's a strong sense at KIT, even though the technical advisors were temporarily relocated in March, everyone's been working together remotely, but there's a strong sense of collegiality, working together, lots of Zoom meetings, as you would imagine, and maintaining continuity but also adapting to COVID as the situation unfolds and being prepared for sudden change should it be required, but also putting in place structures and strategies to keep the Institute functioning without a drop in, say, quality of delivery or quality of outcome.
Fantastic. So it's very flexible. It's great to hear things are still moving forward. So that's wonderful. With most adult education institutions, they're always innovative. They're always planning ahead. There's always a continual improvement plan in place. What are the plans for the Institute moving forward beyond 2020?
Yeah, the current government has a strong domestic agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So it sees the future being quite a lot of development in the outer islands.
Okay.
And obviously KIT will have a very important role to play in that. So, adapting into the future will involve probably increased delivery in outer island locations.
Mm-hmm.
And the government has quite ambitious plans for the development of Christmas Island. It has a nascent tourism industry around bone fishing, and there's also further opportunities there to expand the tourism industry. So KIT is well placed in the future to support the development of that industry through a skilled workforce.
Yep. Wonderful. All right. So it's all opportunities and unknowns, really, yet to be fully identified. But so many wonderful options out there. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the Institute, through the Skills for Employment program, has very strong capability to adapt pivot is the word that you hear a lot at the moment related to COVID. But I think, in a sense, COVID or no COVID, the Institute has been on a path of sort of adaptation and innovation for the last decade, which I think has led it to this point now, where it is a you know, regionally recognised, quality assured, demand-driven institute that, you know, I think is a model perhaps for other small island states to look at how a national training provider can evolve over time and you know, really be quite a contributor to the kind of economic prosperity and social prosperity as well for the country.
Absolutely. Very dynamic. Absolutely. So you've been there for 13 years, if my maths serves me correctly. In and out.
Yeah, in and out. In and out. I haven't been.
No, that's fine. But reflecting back upon that period of time and your involvement with the KIT, is there one professional highlight that really stands out for you?
Look, if I had to choose one, I mean, that's always difficult, isn't it, choosing one thing? The biggest highlight for me was the conference that two of our KIT lecturers spoke at last year in Melbourne at the International Federation of Colleges and Polytechnics, TAFE Directors Australia National Conference.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, just sitting in the room listening to my colleagues from Kiribati talk about the evolution of Kiribati Institute of Technology and thinking that I had a very small part to play in that,
mm-hmm.
that was probably the biggest highlight. You know, in a room full of people from all over the world,
mm-hmm.
Africa and Asia, people from North America, people from Europe, listening to women TVET educators talk about the evolution of this institute and its contribution to the development of Kiribati was a great highlight.
Absolutely, Anthony. It's always an honour, as you know. It's always an honour to be invited back to have a small role, and you've taken the time and the opportunity to share that with our listeners today. And you've spoken with great empathy and great passion. So I really want to thank you for your time and for your professional contribution today.
Oh, look, thanks, Lee. As I say, it's the best kept secret in Kiribati, so the more we can talk about it, the better. I might just mention the Kiribati, the Technical Institute, has a website, kit.edu.ki.
Wonderful.
So if your listeners would like to learn a bit more about the institute and read some about some of the achievements of this year and previous years, by all means, visit the website. But I just would like to thank you, Lee, for the opportunity. It's always great to talk about something that you love doing. It just makes it so much easier, I think. And we could sit here and talk for ages, I think, about Kiribati. But I'll give the eKiribati final closing, if you like, te Māori, te roi, e te tobo moa.
Couldn't have said it better myself. That's where we'll end it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.